Hey guys, it's Cheekies from Cheekies and Chill. Cleaning today? Well, not exactly my idea of fun, but wait a second. Is Fabuloso involved? Because that's different. Cleaning with Fabuloso 2x concentrated cleaner turns chores into fiestas. Fabuloso pairs twice the concentrated cleaning power with long-lasting lavender freshness. From showers to countertops, floors to doorknobs, it leaves your whole home smelling and feeling like a fresh oasis. You may never love cleaning, but you will love a home cleaned with Fabuloso. So make your home dramatically clean with Fabuloso. Pick some up today at your favorite store. Fabuloso 2x concentrated formula provides 2x more active ingredients versus non-concentrated Fabuloso original. Use as directed.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey everybody, welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I am the host of the aforementioned podcast. And alongside me is Stephen English.
Yeah, buddy.
The producer. And he probably has some other roles in this podcast.
Yeah, you know,
That's not a good start. That's not when the job description starts with that.
I'm trying to think of what I can say. Yeah, I'm an uploader.
Yeah.
I upload. Uh-huh. I'm a description
writer.
You
download if you need to.
I download if I need to when necessary.
And alongside him with a really nice, pleasant, upbeat laugh that we don't normally have in our intros here is the one and only Dorothy Tran is
Dorothy
here.
Dorothy Tran.
Yay! Hi, guys.
How are you, Dorothy?
Good.
Thanks for hanging alongside with us here. If you guys don't know and you haven't listened to the episode that we've done with Dorothy or this is your first time tuning in, Dorothy is the wife of our producer.
Yeah.
Assuming they have been married 3 times.
Too many.
Yeah. Too many. That oh is boy. 3 times too many. And she's got a baby on the way.
Oh, that's yeah. right.
When is that baby coming?
August 10th.
Yeah.
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 That's
pretty soon. I mean, it's...
That's going to be a hot summer for you.
Oh, I know.
We're
like 13 weeks counting right now. Ooh, 13 yeah. more weeks to go.
You're like the only citizen in San Diego right now, like, praising God for the overcast. You're
oh,
like,
keep for real. Cool, Lord. I've been looking at, like, bathing suits, like pregnancy maternity ones. Yeah. Should have had, like, a cute one.
You know, you looked on my phone because I was on something the other day, and it kept coming up. Like bathing suit things kept coming up on my phone, and I was like, "What site did I go to that they think I like want to like peruse like pregnant yeah. women in swimsuits?" Yeah, but that yeah. makes way more sense.
Yeah, because I've been trying to find like right. something cute.
Well, stop doing it on my phone. You're messing up all my ads, man.
Sorry, boo.
I'm trying to find out what's cool out there.
But you're like, well, while I'm here, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, I checked it out. I mean, Google knows what it's doing. They're not idiots. They know what they're doing. And you know what?
It'd be
3
really
hours
funny
later, I came out the other
you
side.
You said end. That, and Dorothy, you're like, why? I didn't use your computer.
I didn't use your phone.
Yeah, right? What are you looking at?
No, I was shopping for you.
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
Mother's
yeah,
Day.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to.
Right.
There's a particular topic that has to do with pregnancy that I want. We invited Dorothy to be on. We're going to talk about it in a little bit. Before we do that, we always have some normal little business to get yeah. into, though. Our episode today mm-hmm. is with the very funny Jason Lawhead.
Yes.
Jason is a stand-up comedian. He tours all over. He opens for the great Bill Burr. He's based like halfway between here and he's like, you know, what do we call it? North County?
North County.
He's around okay. the San Diego yeah. area. Really, really funny guy. You can follow him on Instagram at Lawhead's Court. LAWHEADSCOURT. You're probably going to be able to spell that. And his Twitter handle is Jason Lawhead. You can give him a follow there. We have a yeah. we have a nice little chat with him.
Yeah.
We chat a lot of sports.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is this is going to be a sports-heavy episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is fine. I can swim in those waters.
Yeah.
We can hang in those. So we talk. But he grew up in like a sports family. His dad was a coach. They're Midwest folks. Cleveland, like, just like basketball, football, baseball, like everything.
Yeah.
It was like the cornerstone of his family.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like
his first job was being a
yeah,
ball boy. Yeah,
it seemed like it was hard for him to even remember a childhood memory that like he, it was right. all filtered through sports.
Right.
You know? Like he knew nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like, what crazy. Was Christmas? Is like, well, sports. And you're like, yeah, all right.
The whole family just speaks in sports talk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like dad was the coach and mom was crazy fan and. You know, he missed too many shots. He doesn't get to eat, that kind of stuff. Not, yeah. not to that extreme. So, but speaking of sports, this is, I'm telling you, everything is going to segue nicely into sports today. It's a very sports heavy episode. If you guys did not listen to us last week, then this is the first you're going to be here about. But we are working with the Salvation Army Croc Center and their Heroes fundraising campaign. Yeah. Dorothy, do you know about that?
No, I don't. Look, tell me
listen
more.
To this pitch that I can give you right here.
Yeah.
As many of you guys do know, for 5 years, I worked for the Salvation Army Croc Center, and my wife continues to work there. We're really involved in their community, and they have unbelievable amounts of programs, ballet, you know, the piano lessons, swim lessons, and a big part of what they do is obviously sports programs, flag football, soccer, basketball, tons of sports.
Hockey. I love
hockey.
That.
Oh, yeah. Ice hockey, all kinds of fun stuff. And... the Croc Center is strategically placed in a community where a lot of the kids and families and seniors around there can't afford to partake in those programs.
Yeah.
So the Heroes campaign is a campaign that they do every year to raise money for those individuals in need in that community to be able to take part in the life-changing programs at the Croc Center.
Yeah.
So we're working with them because in May through June, they're sending out to raise $105,000 just to give money to these individuals. It's such an easy way to directly help people. I think sometimes when you give to a charity, you're like, I don't know where this is going to go.
Like, yeah, what are they going to do with my money?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. This is going to teach a kid how to swim. This is going to give a kid a week of day camp. This is going to like give seniors activity, you know, like programs for health or to teach them how to use a computer.
Yeah,
like
Krav Maga like for seniors.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get started.
It. And we're making it as easy as possible to give. All you have to do to give to this is text BACKSEAT, that's one word, to 41444. That's text BACKSEAT to 41444.
Yeah, that's super.
BACKSEAT to 41444.
Four.
You want to say it another time, don't you? You guys got it. And I love that you guys have always been doing it. Please, when you do it, if you think to, it's going to send you the verification once you donate.
Yeah.
And a couple of you guys have been like uploading that and putting it on Instagram and tagging us in the Croc Center. Love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to give back. You did?
It's very easy. Yeah, I gave my whole producer's fee last week.
Is that true?
Yes.
Are you telling the truth?
I'm telling the truth, yeah.
Oh, man.
So I want everyone
to
match.
No, I had no idea.
I want everyone to match my $14.
Oh, see, I knew it was a bit. I knew it was a bit.
No, I did, though. I did. I gave
you
my...
You know I can verify that, right? I mean...
Okay, I was going to.
He's doing this to. He's doing this.
I meant to.
Okay, now let me read one email, and then we're going to get into it with the one Dorothy Tran here, who's the only real professional we have here in radio. So...
Right.
I wanted to read this email that we got today with the subject, Dear Host Dustin and Producer Steven.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when they give us our titles like that. It's my favorite. This is from Lauren. Lauren said this, sent this to us just a couple days ago. I'm a latecomer to the podcast scene, a 30-ish mom of three girls with another on the way.
Hey, congratulations.
Oh, my gosh. And saw Dustin on tour last year and decided to check it out. That was November, and I've since listened to every episode at least once. I've tried finding another podcast to listen to, but nothing measures up to the gloriousness that is Don't Make Me. I like that she kind of gave us a little nickname there, too. Don't Make
glorious.
Me.
Don't Make Me.
Yeah, Don't Make Me.
She's got four kids, man. She don't have time
to this is my favorite part. That's why I wanted to read. My new favorite hobby is plugging in my headphones, ignoring my three kids, and cleaning the house. It's literally the only thing that motivates me to clean these days. If only I had a munchie mug. Boom.
Oh.
Somebody else put the sponsor sneak in for me. This is
Lauren, I'm coming after you, man.
Lauren, how old are your kids, Lauren?
This is a validated email. Yeah. Wow. I don't even have to try and sneak in the munchie.
Lauren, if I see you, I know that you're complicit in this whole game of this whole game that we've got going on, and I'm coming after every single
person.
That's
a genuine too.
I know. I'm coming after everybody though.
Yeah.
I'm getting my revenge on everybody.
Dorothy, what do you know about munchie mug?
I know that it's the best snack cup around, and it's made and manufactured in the United States of America.
Oh my gosh. We are so grateful for Munchie Mug and their partnership with us. Just like Dorothy said, even better than we do. It is the best spill-proof cup on the market.
Yeah.
And all
they come in really cute colors, oh, too, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Teal's really hot right now, you guys. Oh, it's teal. Like, kind of like the Tiffany's color.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really cute. And the gray. Those are like two of the biggest sellers. And they're and just adorable.
Well, if you wanted to get one, did you know that you get free shipping?
I did not.
And did you, if you wanted a discount, do you know how to get a discount?
I'm going to guess it has something with Don't Make Me Come Back There.
You're going to go to munchiemug.com. Mm-hmm. You're going to type in Don't Make Me.
Yeah.
And you're going to get 25% off of 20. I forget the promo
25.
Code. 25.
That's a steal. That's a steal.
Plus yeah. free shipping.
Yeah, come on.
And
yeah.
Dorothy, you can go to munchiemug.com and put in the promo code I don't listen to my husband's podcast. Because you don't, because if you did, you'd know. That's the promo code. Right.
Also, that could be said the same for you,
baby.
Don't
listen to hers.
Because I talked all the
I like that you create work for him.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That is true. I don't listen to hers either.
It's always a treat to have you on, and this is your third time on.
Yeah, I love being on with you guys.
It's always a treat. What I specifically wanted to talk to you about today, tonight, because this is sometimes we record these in advance, but this is the, you know, this podcast is coming out in like 3 hours, depending.
Yeah, depending on when you get done.
Yeah, and trending today is, I know a few of you guys probably saw, some of you guys are more plugged in than others. Had you seen this? Had you guys seen this?
I didn't see it until you sent this to me, actually.
A really, really interesting story today. An opinion piece that ran in the New York Times from a former Olympian and national champion. I think I'm saying it right. Alicia Montano, I think is how you say it. Olympic runner and three-time U.S. national champion.
Right.
Okay. And told her story of getting pregnant and having a kid. And just how her life changed, not just personally, because of course it's going to change personally.
Right.
Sure.
But how it changed professionally as a runner and her sponsorships. Now, chime in here. Did you read the story, Stephen?
I didn't read it.
Okay,
no.
Great. Well, I'm sure you'll still chime in with a strong opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm very opinionated. Yeah.
If I'm understanding, if I'm recalling correctly, and you can fill me in if I'm wrong, if you think Dorothy is, she essentially said that Nike, who was her sponsor, which is mm-hmm. how they make their money. Mm-hmm. Was treating it like an injury.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because I didn't know that. I mean, she was going on about, it's not just Nike, but it's all the sponsors and even the Olympics.
Right.
That's their only way of earning income is through sponsorships.
Right.
And only if they place in the top three or four or five.
It's not a financially lucrative thing.
No.
I think
no.
especially in smaller sports like that.
Yeah,
right?
Track.
Yeah.
You're not running out of there with like a ton of money.
Yeah. So Nike made pretty clear to her, like, okay, but if you're not competing again soon, we're going to kick you to the curb.
Yeah. They paused her contract is what she said.
Which is firing you.
I mean, like, you're not getting paid.
Right.
That's insane.
Pausing a contract.
Yeah. And she said the U.S. Olympic committee took away her health insurance when she's not competing either. So how are you supposed to have a kid? How are you supposed to raise a baby?
Wow.
Without health insurance.
And these women are like the breadwinners for their family.
Yeah. Right.
And it's so crazy. When I read that, I couldn't believe it. I didn't realize that. And then it made me really mad because Nike got me. Remember a couple months ago when they put out that whole ad about like female empowerment and when you cry, then they say you're emotional, but it's not. And you know, it was all about Serena Williams becoming a mom and being super awesome and being a world-class athlete. And I was like, yeah, like go women. I'm so happy that somebody else is coming out and recognizing this, but to learn the hypocrisy.
I know. Yeah, absolutely.
I was so mad.
Yeah, and Serena, I thought, was an interesting case, too, because you know that it didn't kick Serena to the curb.
No.
Because she's a moneymaker.
Yeah.
She's a moneymaker. I would never call for a protest of anybody. Live your life, buy the products that you wanted.
Right.
Whatever. But I do think that is such a fair critique of their hypocrisy.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Like you said, that it's all this stuff. But I felt the same thing when the Kaepernick stuff came out, because I'm like, listen, you can get behind this or not get behind this. But if you think that Nike has true convictions on this, you're an idiot.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Nike's doing this to sell some sneakers.
That's why those billboards ran in L.A.
Yeah.
San Francisco, New York.
Yeah.
Chicago.
I didn't see him when I was in Birmingham.
They did not run. No, they did not. No. They did not run in Chattanooga. They did not run in. Yeah, they ran in. Yeah, and where they know the people would look up and go, oh, yeah. But J.J. Watt was still on every single Houston billboard. Yeah. There's definitely no Kaepernick in Houston.
Let me ask this then with that, because I was talking to Melissa about this, and they're almost this weird hybrid because, like, you know, Melissa right now, if Melissa got pregnant, which Lord willing, she won't. her words, not mine. I actually showed her a picture of, we have a pregnant cousin today. Just like, any part of you she want to have, like, wish, you know, we could have one more, or you want to get pregnant again? She's like, God, no. Like,
you guys are good with three.
Absolutely not. Yeah. There's no part of me. And I was like, all right. Well,
I can see her say that's really funny.
Yeah. She was like, mad at me. Like,
are you sick?
How many Trulies did you have on the plane? Take it easy. Oh, LaCroix. You got to. It was like, but right now, like, she's not insured. But so, because we're, you know, independent contractors. Like,
right.
We own Dustin Nickerson Comedy, but like that's just a formality. Like,
right.
we're contractors,
mm-hmm.
So we have insurance that we buy, you know, that we pay through the state and all that kind of stuff. And well, we pay private insurance, but that's, and so we knew if she would get pregnant, we would have to pay for that. But that's so much different than to what you said, which is, no, you have health insurance,
right?
Until you get pregnant,
right?
And then what are you supposed to do,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what the answer is. What's the answer? Because I understand it. I think like the Nike CEO, you know, are saying there, or not even the CEO, but the business manager is going like, listen, we're not making any. The point of us sponsoring these athletes is so that our logo is on TV,
right,
and is at these events, and our brand is being perpetuated.
Yeah.
And if they're not doing this, then they're
but
not
that's
fulfilling
so
their
messed
end of,
up, though.
I don't disagree.
It's such a double standard. It's like,
let the record show why those were not. I would.
Right. Those were yours. No.
Because if that gets blogged about,
yeah.
But it's crazy because, like, it's not like when these football players who or basketball players, other athletes, male athletes, are going out and starting families, they're not getting punished for it. Whereas these women are getting punished for it.
I mean, yeah. Even when they get hurt, I mean, Boogie Cousins is, I mean, I'm sure Boogie Cousins didn't lose whatever money he's making from Nike. He's played like 15 or 20 games this year.
Yeah.
He's been sitting on the sidelines wearing, not even wearing like the jersey, wearing just a suit.
What was the Steelers guy that sat out all year this year?
Oh, Le'Veon Bell? Yeah.
He's still.
I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure they still kept that 100%. Check coming.
Yeah. And I think it's funny too that like, it's super short-sighted that they didn't see this coming.
Right.
Like, how do you not see, in this day and age, how do you not see a backlash to something this, like, this coming? Like, you could have told this woman, hey, not only are we going to pay through your insurance through this, but we're going to, like, put you out there. We want you to tell, build on the same thing they did with the Serena Williams thing. I mean, this is a very cynical way of saying it, but I mean, if you're going to make a decision, at least, like,
Get ahead of it
and say, we're going to keep paying you, and we want you to go out. We want you to be on Good Morning America.
No, they did do that with her when she ran her with her first daughter.
Yeah.
She was 8 months pregnant running a race.
Mm-hmm.
And
what?
She was on all these talk shows and she was saying, you know, hey, I'm doing this to show that, you know, exercise is good for pregnant women and their babies and that you can do it. Meanwhile, in the back of her mind, she's thinking like, I'm doing this because I need to be able to have this baby and pay for my baby.
Because
if she were to, I mean, anything else, she wouldn't be getting paid.
Yeah.
Like, she can't come out and say, well, I have to do it because Nike's not going to pay me.
Right.
You know, then they'll pull her sponsorship.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And then you got to sign with ASICS and nobody.
She did sign with ASICS.
She did sign with ASICS. Yeah.
Pull a Kawhi and go to Puma.
And what's after that?
I don't know. Adidas? I don't know.
Diadora?
I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I do like any time that hypocrisy like that is exposed. And I think it was like a really beautiful, honest piece that she did. I was glad to see it was trending. I just want to let you guys know that, Steven, if you do get pregnant, I will continue to pay you.
Oh, what a good guy.
If a miracle happens like that, no. Well, thank you, Dorothy, for swinging by and talking on that. We'll have you again on soon.
Yeah, I always want to hear
you. Not just when it's like a pregnancy related thing.
Okay, cool.
I knew I was coming over to you guys' place anyways, and I was like, oh my gosh.
That's just real.
There is a well-spoken, intelligent, thoughtful pregnant woman in that home already. Get her on. Guys, as always, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you may listen to us, and shoot us emails at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. And if you want to do the work for me and
maybe throw in a munchie
mug. Sneaking in that munchie mug. Egg. I appreciate it. All right. Enjoy this episode, everybody.
Take care.
Well, thanks for doing this, buddy. Yeah, I appreciate you coming in. Yeah, so I just came. I'm in an emotional mood because I just came from my son's game. He's like on a bad team this year.
Okay.
And
how old again?
He's 11.
Okay.
So it's his last year of Little League before he either does travel ball or just kind of continues into Patriot League or whatever. But he's on a bad team. He's a good player, but he's on a bad team. And we were playing the team today that's like the finally we're going to get a win team.
Ugh.
In the you know. And
I don't like where the story's going.
Well, and then we lost. Ugh. And then there was a realization of like, oh no, we're finally going to get a win team.
Yeah. That's so funny.
And you could just feel it hit the kids of like, oh no, we thought they were the bottom feeders.
Yeah.
And we're losing to them.
Wow.
And it was a dramatic game. Like they went up and we left a lot of runners on early, which always scares you. Yeah. We were like up 3-0, but we had back to back innings where we left the bases loaded and we're like,
oh wow.
That's a problem. That can be. And
they play, what, 6 innings?
6 innings, and there was, like, some controversial calls, and I got scolded by the ump.
So are you coaching?
No, I was just in the...
You're in the audience getting scolded by the ump.
I help coach when I'm, like, I'll help coach practices, but they can only be, like, 2 or 3 in the dugout, so I'm just, like...
Gotcha.
But I usually am pretty, but there was...
You're like Dennis Hopper and Hoosier. You just come in drunk, screaming, crashing the field.
Hey, that's a double! Now you got the bag on that
one! Don't worry, it's just one of the players.
I'd like to think no.
Okay, I'm just kidding.
But there were two. Well, there was one today where there were two plays today. One where there was a bad call at third, and I was like, he took his foot off the bag. And the ump turned and looked at me. This was after the second thing I had said to him. That was the second thing I had said to him. He was like, I don't know what you're looking at. And I was like, oh, okay, you hear me now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the one before that, though, I was right, and they switched it because, you know, that was like, I don't know, I'm sure you know baseball really well, but there was like, you know, a kid hit a double and the run scored, but then he got thrown out at third. Right. And he's like, the run doesn't count. And I was like, oh no, the run does count.
If right. The run came in across the plate before the tag was applied,
exactly.
It sure does.
As long as it wasn't a force out.
As long as there wasn't a force to end the inning. Yes.
And then he heard that one, but he didn't. I could tell he didn't like that because the second one was not enough to get us.
So you corrected him on a call. He never overturned that call.
He did overturn that call.
Oh, so.
But he didn't like that.
He didn't like that he had to be taught the. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
He just didn't know the rules. Another one later where it was a kid got beaned and then he tried to run to second. And our coach was like, that's a dead ball. And everyone's looking at the ump and he just nodded yes. And I was like, you got to make that call, not the.
Right.
Yeah.
All that to say, even with my antics, we lost and I think are officially the worst team potentially.
Ooh, do you have any wins?
We have a couple wins. Okay. Yeah. We have. It's a long season. And at this level, it is all about pitching.
Yeah.
If you have, and we just don't have.
I think it's about at any level, really. At the end of the day, you know, you can hit bad pitching. And if that is, you know, all you can do, then you're going to lose the good pitching.
Yeah.
Always.
And do you remember being a kid, you know, playing baseball, like how intimidated you'd be by a fast pitcher?
Oh, well, that's what I was saying.
Like rumor would get around.
At that age, there usually is. Yeah, rumor would get around. Yeah. Like, you know. You didn't even walk close to those kids in the hallway that could throw like 70 at that age, you know? Like, you were just like, dude, I don't even want to get close to that kid. I mean, you know, dodgeball, all those things that you might have got thrown.
Yeah.
But especially if they went to another school and there was like a legend about them.
There's
right?
like folklore.
Right.
Yeah,
right. There's
yeah.
folklore. Like, we had a kid, I played on a team with a kid that had one of those. I was a not even a serviceable baseball player. I loved the sport.
Right.
I loved it. And
you grew up in Cleveland?
I grew up in the Cleveland area.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was legendary high school basketball coach.
Oh, okay.
So that was the sport I was really groomed in. And I was a solid high school ball player on very good teams, not like your son. But we were like state ranked. I mean, my dad had state ranked programs almost every year. And I always wished, and I didn't play baseball in high school because we had a really good baseball program too. It was like a bet. We were like known for no football. It's just like 3-7 every year. And then basketball and baseball were the two big sports in high school. And I already knew, I was smart enough to know the writing on the wall. I was the actually because the baseball coach, you know, and my dad was the basketball coach. So they were friends, lifelong friends. They were like kind of there their whole lives. I actually kept, this is interesting, I was not good enough to play high school baseball, but I am inducted into the Lorraine Sports Hall of Fame on the 1990 Lorraine Catholic Boys State Runner-Up Baseball Team because I was the only kid in school that didn't play, nerdy enough about baseball that knew how to keep official score. So Coach McCall brought me along for the ride, and he put my name on the register of a team member. I was blown away because I didn't even, you know, for the state games and tournaments, I didn't get a sit in the dug. I didn't. There was official scorekeepers represented. I didn't get to be. You know, I could sit back in the crowd if I wanted and do it, but it was no reason. So I basically just did them for the home games because I didn't want to travel with the team. It was like I was playing open gyms after school. Like if there was a home game behind the school, I did it.
Sure, why not?
But you know what? I never made it into the Lorraine Sports Hall of Fame for any basketball category. My dad's there as a coach. He's got a few teams inducted, special teams that were that good.
Yeah.
And he's got ex-players that were greats that have been inducted over time. And I'm inducted for a sport I didn't even play. I couldn't even keep score of the away games. And I'm inducted.
I would love if there were just like a little pair of glasses next to your name in there or something. Yeah. Like the little asterisk.
Little tiny pencil.
Yeah. The little tiny pencil. Yeah. That's what
I've got they give you the certificate that looks like a college. The closest thing I have to a doctor.
Well, the funny thing is you were a jock. Like you were playing.
Well, yeah, I was an athlete.
Yeah,
No.
You weren't the stereotypical scorekeeper though.
No, exactly. For baseball, I had to be.
Yeah.
Football, I didn't play in high school. I could have played. I was a solid football player, secondary. I was laying hard hits from the secondary in junior high.
Were you a big kid? Or?
No, but I was fearless, and I had some speed to get to the ball. Yeah. So I was, and I had a big head. I don't know if you noticed, but I have a huge.
I was going to say something. I'm glad you said it.
Dude, I have a huge head. And so I had a
but
huge
was it
head
that size at like 11?
It was bigger than everybody else's. I had to wait for a helmet. No, they had to go. I'm not kidding you. The seventh grade conditioning, I had to do nothing but run for the first week because they had to wait to get a helmet from the high school center.
That's hilarious.
That's so funny because that is the second comedian who we've had on this podcast. Chinadu Unaka, who had to have like a special helmet, and I'm thinking there's something here, some family or some childhood trauma that led you into comedy. I've just like
your helmet didn't fit right. Yeah,
no, I just ridiculed. Yeah, so you had big head early.
I had a big head, and I could lay the wood. I wasn't afraid. If there was fines in like junior high football for today's rules, I would owe the league $3 million for the amount of just direct head hits I would have. But I could hit, I broke a guy that's still a friend of mine today. I broke his sternum in a game. He came across the middle, eighth grade football. He came across the middle, a little quick tight end pass over the middle, 7 or 8 yards. And I went right into the middle of, he was exposed. And I went right in and buried him hard off of about a 2 or 3 step sprint into his chest. And pile-drived him into the ground. No, they took him away in an ambulance, I swear to God.
And you remain friends.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, it was just a good, it was a hit. I didn't hit him in the helmet.
Yeah. But, so what you're saying is if you would have kept playing, you would have been pretty actively
I would have been able to,
at
I would
this
have
point.
Been known as a guy that, like, watch out going across the middle. Because that dude's got a head, he's got an orange on the toothpick. Yeah. Look at the size of that boy's head.
I love it, man.
My head was so big that I used to do my own joke back then. I go, my head's so big in this helmet, they're going to call us for too many men on the field.
In your
helmet. But there's only 11 of us. But there's 12 heads.
So look at the size of that noggin.
I just counted 12 heads. No, there's absolutely 11 bodies.
Your helmet looks like the old cart that used to have the helmet back in the 80s.
Yes. The bullpen cart.
Why'd they get rid of those? Those were way more stylish, right?
That's nice.
You know, are you too young for that?
I'm older than you.
I know. You're just a late start to life.
That's
so
funny. Yeah, so, man, I just stuck the B-ball and hoops.
And your dad was your coach?
Yeah, my dad was the high school varsity coach.
So there's one of two extremes on coach's kid, right? Uh-huh. Which is, like, he's the absolute hardest on you.
Yeah.
Or you're the best player, like, you know. Sure. Like, our on our kid's team right now, right. The coach's kid bats third.
Right,
plays
right.
Shortstop when he's not.
That wasn't a case at all with us. Now, my dad wasn't some just absolute, you know, kick us in the shin hard.
Yeah.
He was a realist is what he was. And he, you know, my junior year, I came off the bench early on and did well, you know, in the first, I was a sixth or seventh man my junior year. We had a really good team. We went all the way to the final at 8-16. Mm-hmm. And I was playing behind two basically all-state guards that were seniors. And I came in and I played steady in the first, you know, half of the season. And we, you know, we played good teams all the time. And then I went into a slump and he benched me. I mean, there was a time where I didn't get into ball games in a stretch, and it was contentious at home.
Little tension at the dinner table. But did it? Were you? So
he was a realist. He was like, "Hey man, you know, this is the way it is." You know? And I mean, he was hard on me. Like if I screwed up, I mean, he didn't coddle me. Now my senior year, I started at the two guard and we had a good team, and you know, I was regulated to about seven shots a game. I was I could shoot. I was a great 3-point shooter. I was a deadly 3-point shooter, but we were an inside team. We were 6'7" and 6'6" up front, or 6'6", 6'5", and our point guard was 6'3". I mean, we were big, and we played a style of ball that pounded it into the post, and we either played transition up and down, and that's where I got points in transition on some layups and in half-court sets on kickouts to threes. Now, we had a great forward, an all-state forward who was a junior when I was a senior, that would get double-teamed a lot, and I got some kickouts. So I had my nights where there was – but, I mean, over the average, I averaged about 7.5 shot attempts a game. Some games I got my feed as a 3-point shooter,
right.
But that's what I was. And I was just a, you know, play steady, hard defense, pass the ball. I was a great passer, and mm-hmm. I loved, you know, playing in that atmosphere, because we, you know, Ohio basketball, those little communities, that's, you know, back in those days, I played in the early 90s and late 80s, early 90s, and, you know, those places were just hotbeds, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, you'd go in. I mean, I was playing, I could have played like Division III small college ball, and you'd go visit those places and there'd be 200 people, and it was like some students and their parents and grandparents. And I was playing, we were playing, you know, the news were coming out to our games.
Yeah,
we were playing in front of 3,000-4,000 sold out gyms, big, you know, end zone seat gyms.
Yeah.
And you know, we were on the radio all the time. We were on a few different TV. Like, we, you know,
I remember culturally, like, it's so ingrained in the Midwest and Ohio. So I remember this was before comedy, is like probably 7-8 years ago. The last day job I had, I worked for rec centers, mm-hmm. like YMCAs. And we went to, like, this tiny one in Dayton. It was, like, our smallest one that we had. And I went in, and it was the most immaculate basketball court I'd ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, then we went into, like, I mean, they barely had, like, functioning toilets and water.
Right.
And then they had, like, and then I went into their coach's room, and I was like, this is nicer than the rest of this facility.
Yeah.
72-inch flat screens, comfortable chair. Like, I was like, you know, like, just dialed in microphones to each other. It's like, you put all the money on the coach's room.
Right. Yeah. No, a lot of those, I mean, you should see some of those high school gyms and some of those places all over Ohio, because high school football and basketball, those sports are just, they're everything out there. You know, I mean, high school football, Ohio's one of the, it's where the Football Hall of Fame is.
Right.
You know, the famous Massillon and Canton-McKinley rivalry, mm-hmm. where the Hall of Fame game is. That's I mean, the Hall of Fame, that stadium that they use, that's a high school football stadium.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Canton-McKinley's. And then up the road is Paul Brown Stadium, where Massillon is. And that's another 25,000 seater. I mean,
it's amazing. It's something we don't appreciate on the West Coast. Because I grew up in Seattle and I live in, you know, San Diego now. I remember a few years ago, I was doing a show in like Shreveport, Louisiana, and I drove by this high school and I was like, oh, what D1 college stadium is that? And they're like, oh no, that's the less good high school stadium in town.
Right.
Freaking Jumbotron.
Texas is full of high school football stadiums that look like college size stadiums.
Yeah,
they're enormous. It's amazing. So Ohio's got that, like, and so I grew up in this cool atmosphere of, you know, my dad. So as a, that was my whole life.
I mean,
I started out as a ball boy, you know, and then I was like a team manager, and then I played for my dad, and then I went.
These were all for your dad's teams?
Yeah. My dad was in the same job. He was the head coach at our high school for his whole life.
Was he like the PE teacher slash?
No, he was the athletic director, and he also taught a couple of.
That was a full-time job at your high school, being the AD?
Well, no, he had to teach, so he taught to, but he was an administrator, then he moved up to like dean of men as well, so he had some administrative hours and his head coaching, and then he taught to political science. He was a big political science guy, so he taught to political science electives for seniors. It was like a history elective, and he kind of shaped. I used to do a bit about it where he was like such a good coach, they just let him pick. They were like, you know, you got to teach. they let him, whatever you want. They're like, yeah, you got all these degrees. You could teach a social study. You could teach an elective. We get you early classes. Then you go be ADO. He'd be like, oh, you know, why don't we just have, and they were like, yeah, we got geography, we got, you know,
whatever you want, buddy.
This world history or this Vietnam, whatever. You're like, hey, he basically was just like, why don't you just do like current events? And they were like, huh? And he was like, yeah, you know, like what happened yesterday, last week, you know, stuff like that. It's good for the kids. And they were like, well, there's not really a curriculum. We have like geography books, like we have things we'll get Time Magazine, we'll get Newsweek, and we'll do these things. So that's what he did. And you know what? It's funny is that I make a joke about it because he would just be like, hey, just test you tomorrow on yesterday. That's all the guy did. It was a genius role. He's like, what was it? So in the joke, I go, yeah, he's just going to test you tomorrow on yesterday. Just pay attention to what happened yesterday. But actually, it worked out to be this thing that a lot of people were like, dude, it's a great class. He was a good lecturist because he was a great communicator. To be a great coach, you have to be a great communicator.
Well,
so.
to get high schoolers to think critically on current events is more valuable than almost anything they're learning.
Yeah, right. And he would do 10-day, every day you did a quiz, and it was about, like, he would give you an assignment, like, the night before, he'd be like, if you can't, and that was in the day of, like, you know, by that time, like, VHS and whatever, and he'd be like, if you can't take notes on Peter Jennings tonight, and if you can't be by the TV because you have, like, practice or drama or whatever, a thing, da-da-da, pick somebody, get a partner who can watch it, raise your hand, like somebody, and then he'd be like, you partner up, take their notes, share their notes, take good notes, and then next time, you know, somebody trade off. But so he would do that, so then you would get like a 10 question quiz on what Peter his whole half hour of Nightline,
right?
What was it? What did he talk about when he talked about it like that? Or then he would give you an article on Newsweek and go 10 tomorrow, read that article. It's just a 2-page article, quick little snippet about this part of thing, and then I'm gonna have 10 quick little hitters. And so people actually really like it. Ended up being he was a really good teacher because he was a good coach, so he was teaching something that he was passionate about and he wanted to get across to people, so he wasn't locked into some subject that he was being like, hey, go teach them this.
Not forcing a curriculum. Yeah, I remember my baseball coach in high school was the worst history teacher in history.
Yeah, right.
Just awful. Just
because because of union guidelines, certain things, like a teacher has to be in the building, so he's an influence, not just some outsider that comes in and coaches. A coach has to be in the building. So a lot of times, great programs will get like they'll just have a coach. Just like, hey, just whatever, teach driver's ed.
Yeah.
Like my dad taught private, but a public school wanted to lure him like some years into his career. Like when I was in junior high, they were trying to bring him in, and he was just like, and the teaching schedule was the whole thing. And then they were trying to be like, all right, well, you could just go teach kids how to drive in the morning. He's like, I want to be able to teach kids, but I want to teach them all day if you want me to coach. Like they were trying, and then he's like, then I don't want to go sit in a car with them.
That's the most stressful. I couldn't imagine.
Are you kidding me?
That's exactly what my grandpa did.
So
my grandpa taught in, so he's like the god of this little city in Northern California, Crescent City, California. He was the high school football and basketball coach for like close to 40 years.
Wow.
And he was the AD. And then towards the end, he was just teaching driver's ed.
That's hilarious. That's your grandpa?
When he shouldn't even have his license anymore.
My grandpa on my mom's side. So he was a college athlete. He was a basketball player, and then he was a runner. He's total jock, and like I said, he's like the god of this little city up there. And just the coolest, sweet, big Niners fan.
That's great. Is he from that city?
No, he's from...
Yakima, which is a small city in central Washington, and then I don't know the story of how
he went to Northern California. That's awesome, because that runs a lot of parallels with my dad, you know. The cool thing with my dad was he's from that town, right? He was an athlete, a three-sport athlete in that town in the 50s. My dad went and started coaching at his alma mater. So he was a basketball and a football standout there and then came back and became the head coach. And that high school eventually paved the way for the high school we had, because they had to end up – the high school was called St. Mary's. It was a small Catholic school that he graduated from. But he was coached from 63 to 69, and that had to close for Lorain Catholic. But that was just everybody just moved over. He was still the head coach. He went and transitioned into that high school and never left.
It's great that your dad like found a way to make it work, because as I understand, like, my grandpa kind of phased out because he just had a hard time with the teaching component. And especially, like, I mean, if you were teaching in the mid-90s compared to the 70s, like, it's like it was a totally different experience. Like, when he would tell stories of, like, you know, kids who, if he caught them chewing and chewing tobacco, he'd make them swallow it and they'd be puking in the side. They were like hitting kids back then, and so by the time we got to the mid-90s in high school, and like, he felt like he had no authority, and he was a real, like, kids these days,
he saw the trailer for Clueless and he's like, I'm out of here.
you know what's funny is my dad never got to Kids These Days, he got to Parents These Days. He did That was his so he started coaching in 62 and quit in 2000, and my brother took over. But the school ended up closing in 2004 because we're like,
your brother shut it down.
Way to go.
Way to go, Matt. No, so it was just, you know, we're from one of those steel rust belt towns that just fell apart over time, and they couldn't support schools anymore.
Is your dad still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive and kicking, two-time cancer survivor, and yeah, man, he's still going, and he, you know, him and my mom still kicking. They're in their 80s now.
Yeah, what was mom like during all this? Like,
mom was she's an interesting cat.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. She's a coach's wife through and through.
I don't think I even know the stereotype of a coach's wife. Just like...
Well... Yeah, I guess I grew up with one.
So you know it well. Like team mom type thing. You know?
No. Total opposite. Absolutely, like total opposite of a dance mom, man. Somebody that would smack a dance mom upside the head.
Yeah,
that's wrong with you. Yeah, bunch of kids. You know what are you stupid? Yeah, no teamwork. Team dinner, mom.
And, making spaghetti and stuff.
Steak dinner, spaghetti dinner. The everything. But hard on you. Yell it. And my mom was she was like a coach. I mean, she barked from. She had reserve seats. Our school, we packed the gym pretty much every
night. You guys had reserve seats?
We had reserve seats, you know, we did. There was hundreds of reserve seat ticket holders. They'd buy them in advance for every home game.
I love it.
Wow. And we had so many, we'd only offer so many tickets to the other student body. Yeah. We had a huge student
body. Scalpers out front?
Upper deck. Well, sometimes, I'm going to tell you something. Sometimes my dad was announcing sellouts 5 days, six, 10 days before ball games that were big on the ticket, you know.
Yeah.
Like where LeBron went, Akron, St. Vincent, St. Mary's. Before LeBron, there was a guy named Jerome Lane. I don't know if you remember the dude that ripped the backboard down at Pitt. So in 85, we had one of the top teams in the state, and they were the defending state champs. They were like number 5 in the USA Today poll. They were coming into our place in a mid-season game, and that game was sold out before the season, like when the season started. I mean, all those tickets were gone. Like this was in the 80s, and somehow the audiovisual guy was able to connect. They had two cameras, beta cameras, and they plugged them into a live monitor, and they oversold tickets. They told people, if you can't get here, people were watching it out in the concession stands monitors like they do, like, kind of today, like they're doing that too. And so games like that, but my mom was had the same seats her whole life, 50-yard line up against the lower section wall, that side went about 10 rows up to a wall, bleachers, and then there was an upper deck that had about on the bench side, and then the other side was a big side. Our gym sat about 2,000, that was a modest gym, I mean, nice big gym, but and she would bark. I mean, bark at the officials. You're terrible. I mean, she had a voice, and she'd get up and she'd you know, criticize you when you played bad. And believe me, you know, there's games I played bad, or my brothers played bad, and you know, she'd get on your case, man. I mean, my dad never brought it home.
Yeah.
My dad never brought it home, but she did.
This makes you like this is like a counter argument to the kid who's like, well, my parents never came to my games. Well,
yeah,
depending on how your parents were, you might not want them there.
You didn't get, exactly. You didn't get a good birthday cake one year. She didn't even get you a birthday cake. She's like, you know what?
Yeah. Exactly. She got me a birthday cake and said 0-6 and had the game. And had the game I play, you know, 1-7 from the field.
Yeah. Just gave you a brick.
2-5 from the line. Brick. Three turnovers.
I just thought you could use another one of these bricks.
Yeah, exactly. A brick.
So you could finish that house you're making. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, that's weird. I mean, no, she was, but you know, she was a coach's wife through and through. Man.
It seems this isn't like you're thinking about the good old days, you know, of your sports. It's like sports were like the foundation that your family was kind of built on. It seemed like in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling, it's funny, I was being interviewed earlier today for like this book a girl's doing, and it was really a cool experience. And she interviewed me for a couple, you know, wanted to get a life story into comedy. And I said, you know, I had the coolest upbringing in my sense. Like I had a functional upbringing. I mean, my parents were hard on us, so there's always that trauma that you carry, but for the regular function, I had a great childhood. I mean, I was born into a basketball gymnasium.
Sure.
And I was, you know, and I was a ball boy. I was rolling around ball. And you know what the cool thing was,
caught him in a net.
Yeah. I never had to idolize anyone, because I got when I was 7-8 years old, I got to touch my heroes. They were 6'5" senior all state ball players, and they were, you know, guys that could dunk. And so when I took bus rides and I was around the team and I was folding their warm ups and I was doing all this stuff, I had access to my heroes. My heroes were I got to pick up the paper on Saturday morning and see the guy that was shooting hoops with me, you know, on the headlines for scoring 38 points. And, you know, people wanted to, you know, so I grew up in that realm of these, my dad had so many great teams and so many great players year after year. So from 9 years old, I saw my brothers play, because I'm the youngest. So I saw them play on great teams. And I got to experience that. And, I went on to coach a little bit after the fact before I started stand-up. I was, you know, the freshman coach at the school for a few years. So I got to be involved in all of it. It's a legacy. It's sad that the school's gone. You know, things have to change. But, there's so many great memories. I'm slowly chipping away at a documentary about kind of the career of that school. My dad's, because, you know, our last name was the only name that coached basketball. I had one of those, get back to saying, like, the first job I ever had was the greatest job I ever had. I was a ball boy, and that was a job I had. I had to make sure that things were following. I mean, I went, cleaned up on a road game, made sure with the other team manager that we had everything on the bus, like everything was folded up after warmups. There's some great photos of me at like a tournament. There's this great photo. I must be 4 or 5 years old, five or 6 years old. And it's a big tournament game on a neutral site, and it's 1977, I think, and there's a referee, and he's standing there looking down at me, and I'm wiping up perspiration off the floor inside the key, right?
But
the backdrop of this packed gym, and there's like these cheerleaders from the 70s, and there's this little boy, and I'm wiping up this spot that the ref called me on to wipe up, as like players are scattered in the photo.
You couldn't have been happier to do it.
Oh, I mean, that was like the coolest thing. Like, I got crashed into by Sam Johnson was his name, 6'11", played for Leary West. Big, these guys were huge. And they ended up beating us in this game, but it was a close tournament game. And because of that, I would sit on the baseline in those tournament games when the gym would get packed, and it would be March by that time. So spring might have sprung sometimes.
Right.
So these gyms were like boiler rooms, because it was unseasonably warm, possibly.
Yeah.
Heat had been on all winter long, and then like the glass is all fogging up, the court saturated. So I was underneath the basket on alert to keep wiping, and he came on a fast break, and we fouled him coming in, you know, the pads against the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And I got absolutely crushed.
The pad against the wall.
They literally had to carry me off, like... they carried me off like I was a dead infant. Like, yeah. It was just like, I was just walked over and I was like crying. I had to take me to like the trainer's room.
Best day of your life.
I was a 5-year-old ball boy. I had to go to the trainer's room.
They're like, I'm sorry, who's coming in right now? Oh, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. I had to go get, you know.
An ice bath.
Yeah, to come back out. I had to come back out to wipe floors like Willis Reed.
I'm always so curious about, and I maybe want to hear your take on this, about what it is about sports that, like, at all levels, just brings, I mean, it'll bring people apart, too, but there's something about it, because it seems, I mean, objectively, like, if you were, like, aliens, you know, evaluating this whole thing, mm-hmm. you'd be like, what? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they're so involved.
It looms really large, yeah.
It's one of the biggest things in American culture.
I think, if not
the biggest thing in American culture.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, I think it brings more people together. I think at the bigger picture, it does bring more people together than it tears them apart. And I think that's based solely a lot of the time on the individual. I think good people that want good things out of a situation, it will turn out good for them. And bad people that want to have a bad situation, probably sports will tear some, or let it get to a point where it's made you that. But I think at the end of the day, the real thing is the limitless possibilities. I think we all love some competition, no matter what it is. Even the most pacifists of some sort have some type of streak of competition that they want to at least, you know, be recognized for, in the forefront of something. So I think that has
I think that's true. I think there's a primal evolutionary type thing in there that's like, I want to win, you know?
Yeah,
like,
you want to be a part of a winner, and you know what?
Well, that's the one I'm more interested in, which is the fanhood. Like, I remember, so the last year before we moved to San Diego was the last Seahawks game I went to, and it was the year that we beat the Saints in the playoffs, the Beast Mode run, one of the most famous plays in Seattle sports history. Sure. And it was a crazy game. We were 7-9. We had no business being in the playoffs, but we won our division, so it was our home game, and we were playing the Saints, who won the Super Bowl the last year, and we go up, and then they come back, and then the Marshawn run happens. And I remember so vividly the euphoria in the air, because it sealed the game.
Yeah.
And I remember full embracing strangers. Yeah. Just hugging them. I don't hug my dad often.
Let me tell you something. I used to do a joke on stage when Kyrie hit the shot for the Cavs.
Yeah.
It was the first time I hugged my brother since my grandma's funeral in 1993. But I go, but the weird part was this time it wasn't uncomfortable. It was actually a really genuine hug.
Yeah. It felt weird.
When it was next to my grandma's casket, it was weird.
Yeah.
Like, do we really have to do that?
But when this guy we don't know.
Yeah, when a guy we don't know is carrying our team to the fight, we're like, oh my God. Yeah. And we held. I mean, we held that.
Yeah. I went to the World Baseball Classic down here.
Oh, nice.
I was the absolute, I would say, maybe, besides, yeah, I think.
Well, national tie is the strongest.
Top five.
I think so.
First of all, the only time I have ever, and probably will ever, unironically chanted USA, and it felt good. Yeah. Like, I get why people do it. Like, I've never done it before, and I didn't think I was going to do it, but everyone was chanting USA, and I was like,
you were ready to go assassinate a terrorist.
It was so much fun. We're doing, and then Manny Machado hits the ball. This is when he's on the Orioles, and Adam Jones, who's from San Diego, robs the home run, and the entire place went absolutely nuts. And the same thing, I was hugging a dude who was next to me. I'm a Dodgers fan. I was hugging a dude in a Giants jersey and a dude in a Rockies jersey. And we were all hugging, like, legit embracing ourselves.
I'm just gonna let you know, it will be less exciting when Jesus comes back.
I know.
There will be less excitement. They'll be like, what? Oh, hold on.
And I think it is. It's also the community, but also I think it's like dope just to see people doing something at the, like, just doing amazing things, doing things at the top of, if you like anything, I don't understand people who are like, sports are stupid. Like, if you think, I mean, if you say that, then you have to say music is dumb.
Absolutely right.
Ballet is stupid. You have to say opera singing because it's just people who are doing something that everyone has tried to do. Everything, even when you're a little kid, you have tried to run or jump or do something. And it's someone who does that at a level that is literally mind-boggling. Boggles the mind. Michael Jordan, when he comes up, that someone just sent me a clip
today where he came up under, went under two, you know what I mean? He was in the air for like 15 seconds, it felt like. You know, he's like seeing someone doing something at that level, something that everyone could do, and seeing someone doing something that great. It's just like,
and to get to that
boggles
level,
the mind.
And to get to that level with the person that says those things, stupid or sports, don't realize the work that went into it.
Either. Sure. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Michael Jordan can jump that high, but to be able to create the things he created time and time again, that took just monumental hours of work, because you just they're just not going to put a guy on the floor that can float by somebody every once in a while. You know what I mean? Like every once in a while. Like, and so all these things, like you look at it, and sports also, it has great stories. I mean, there's stories of, you know, look at what sports has done in the trickle down effect, right? Like, look at what Roberto Clemente has left behind. Look at what, you know.
It's funny. I was watching yesterday, and this is much smaller scale than those guys. I was watching a story from Taylor Rapp, he's coming out of where I went to school, Washington, and he's like an Asian American player in football, and there's like zero. Yeah, he was telling all these stories about, you know, growing up without a role model that looked like him. And I think that you're right about that. I think that what sports does, it's nothing unique about sports, because there's a lot of other vehicles that do this.
Yeah.
But what it does is exposes great human stories, just like music does, just like
ballet,
all piano, everybody, every,
just the, like it exposes ugly stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Just it has its ugly face.
Look at the Tiger arc. You know, like, my gosh, what a beautiful story between him and his dad, and then the fall, and now the comeback, and then, I think what people like about it is the competition, but I think what they like is the humanness of it. And I think that there's something, like a lesson of fanhood, like when you go to, Browns fans are the ultimate example, that anyone is still on board with that.
Yeah.
I actually use the Browns as an example of when people, like my uber liberal friends are like, I can't believe that people still got on board with Trump. And I go, if people are still Browns fans, they will never give up on Trump.
The funny thing that you said that is, one time on a radio interview, I said, we're the Trump fans of sports. Nothing, you can't tell us anything's going to be worse than it is, and we're just going to be like, oh, bro! You know, your GM has been suspended for illegal texting from the go, bro. What do we got? Number two pick this year? Go, bro.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, just where you want it. Got him just where you want him.
It is the same exact thing of when they're like, hey, you know, Trump came out with some like racial comments against Native Americans today. Yeah,
build
MAGA.
That wall.
MAGA.
Build
that wall. It's the exact same thing.
I literally said that to a guy that was like, "Hey, man, it's been." I was like, you know, they'd be like, "You guys, I can't believe that," you know. And now it's funny that now we are literally right now we are catching the biggest like bandwagoners across the country that have the people that made jokes about us, that laughed, the same people that would, when I would, they would laugh at me about, I used to do a bit where I go, you know, being a Browns fan, I go, you tell somebody you're from Cleveland, they don't assume you're a Browns fan still. They kind of give you that. So what are you still a Browns fan?
Did you switch to Colts?
You still a Browns fan? And then when I tell them, they take the news like you just told them your wife became a vegetable and you're gonna stay with her. Like, oh wow.
God bless.
They put a hand on your shoulder. I swear that must be. So.
They lift you up in prayer.
What you're doing is so brave. if you ever need anything, you want to talk during the season, you know, week 10 comes along, you want to just, you know.
Once you're done watching, once your season's over, do you want to come over?
The misery only makes it stronger.
Exactly. So
the misery is why you hugged your brother for that long. Because
it really is.
So forever, they would always say that the three most tortured cities for sports in America are Cleveland, Seattle, and San Diego. Those are the three. Because not only are they bad.
Buffalo.
When they're good. Yeah. Buffalo doesn't have enough teams, though. But, like, when their teams are good.
They got two.
They don't seal the deal. you know, and that's what happened with Seattle forever. So when people are like, they bring up like us losing the Super Bowl to the Patriots, I'm like, you got to understand, I never thought we would win one. We won the year before. I'm like, I'm good.
Do you remember
I'm good forever. And that's the same thing. Hugging strangers, euphoria.
The Cavs are a little different story. Like, we're appreciative of the whole experience. We got a championship. But that town is really deep-rooted in Cleveland Browns football. And a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people will still not feel like the curse is broken until one of those other two wins.
Indians are a cursed team.
Let's say the Browns never healed. Let's say we don't have it. Let's say we're in the same boat. Let's say we're still 1-31, going on 2-62 right now. Right. Let's just say that a World Series this year or last year, something like that, would really just kind of cement it all. It would make sure. It would make almost everybody go, if the Browns never win it,
it'd buy them seven more years.
This town has, if the Browns never win it, this town has, whatever, we've done it. We've really done it with the Cleveland Indians. And there is, the curse is broken.
I think changing the hat is that's the first step for the Indians. I think changing the hat was like, the first thing to like get them
because
you got to have the emotions of everyone. The rest of the nation has to be behind you.
I agreed with finally taking it off for the field. I mean, I still own one.
Yeah,
and I grew up on that, and I try to express to some people when you're a kid growing up with that. You're a fan, right? You identify with that chief, and you kind of and the thing was, is a lot of the reason why that chief was designed in the first place was the C was becoming so taken in all forms of font. Cincinnati, mm-hmm. Chicago had two teams, Cincinnati had another team, so there was these C's. And a lot of the reason why I think, and you're talking about a day and age of insensitivity to the second power.
Yeah. Right.
Obliviousness, you will, just mm-hmm. on, there was a standard to stand out, to logo out. Nobody can be what we are. Right. We go with this mascot, and we go with an emblem, and we go with a logo that's not a letter. Nobody will ever trample on that.
Right. And then everyone else saw, and they're like, no, we're never going to do that. Everyone's like, they're like,
at that point, you just went like, okay, right?
They're like, that's the guy from the Peter Pan movie.
Yeah.
It was a pretty common thing at that point.
Yeah, so they did that. But, in the end of the day, when you look back on history, nobody really, other than the Brooklyn Dodgers at the time, nobody was more fast to be inclusive in breaking in down the racial barriers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the day Jackie Robinson opened in 1947, Larry Doby was in the lineup for the Indians in July 5th of 1947, 3 months later after opening day. Satchel Paige was right behind him. Frank Robinson was the first black manager in the history of baseball. Cleveland Indians player manager.
Yeah.
They've done nothing. That franchise from the front office, we've had good ownership for many years, most of the run of the franchise since the 50s.
Well, we were talking about how it brings people together, and this is a good place to land. I'm ultimately curious. So you said you got the bachelor party coming up.
Yeah.
So you're engaged.
Mazel. Uh-huh.
When's the wedding?
September 21.
Okay, so you've got some time.
Yeah.
What is she in on this? Is she a sports fan?
No, it's great.
That's how my wife is. She'll wear the shirts, and I'm like, listen, I never love you more than when you're in a Washington Husky shirt.
My girl won't.
Yeah, she won't even wear it.
She don't care. And I love that she doesn't, because it gives me another world. She's like my, she's an escape into a life that I have never had. And it's a beautiful life, and I love it. And I can still have, she allows me freedom to be everything. I mean, she loves comedy, and she loves my comedy. She doesn't care about any of the sports. She lets me go in the other room and watch the NBA playoffs if I desire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I make the time for her that she deserves. Yeah. And she is perfect.
Yeah.
And she does. And I don't want her to like sports. You know what? I don't want to talk sports with a girl. I like, listen, your girlfriend, she's cool. I'll go to a party. She knows basketball. I'll have a good time. My girlfriend don't give me, my fiance, she'll walk over here and talk to somebody else. She'll let me talk to a girl that knows about sports, because my girlfriend looks at me and, she's younger and beautiful, and she's like, whatever, I dare you to cheat on me. Whatever.
You're lost,
like,
buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I don't care. She's not, she's secure. Yeah. She's like, talk sports to that girl that knows sports. I don't care. And if that's, you know what I mean? Like, so, I love that element because I talk sports. Yeah. I have so many friends I talk sports with.
Yes.
I'm actually trying to thin some of them out.
Yeah. This podcast didn't help. Then.
This podcast didn't help.
I think that's great advice because that's a great perspective. Because my wife, she'll be like, oh, okay. You know, like if we lose a game or something. And it helps get on. But now I have an uber big sports fan and uber emotional 11-year-old.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now there's two of us moping around.
And what's he emotional about?
Sports.
Your teams, though?
Oh, yeah, no. He took all the Seattle teams.
Okay.
And the Warriors.
Okay.
We don't have a team. We don't have a team
Clippers.
In San Diego.
Pretty soon the Clippers,
We don't have a team in San Diego.
We
don't have a team
in
Seattle,
man. So you have the Clippers in Seattle.
He'll come back. But he's turned on them, too, because the Clippers were so likable at first, or the Warriors were so likable at first, and now, like...
No, they're not. They're
now, one of them has,
they're the
like,
empire now.
Well, every single
they're
one of them
the
has,
empire.
Like, a custom dance move at this it's point. Terrible. Like, it's but anyway, I don't want to go to that. But now, around the house, it's... And now my dad lives with us, too, so, like, a Hawks loss, like, half... 50% of the house is in brutal shape.
And the cat looked kind of sad.
The cat
time,
always
yeah.
looks sad, but... But I think that's fantastic. And you'll notice, like, you've already noticed, it makes recovering fine. Because you have someone in your house that just
doesn't
care.
Give a and you know what? It does make it recover. And because she doesn't, I can't talk to her about it. I'm not going to vent to her about it. I'll go on a text stampede with, like, some boys back home, you know? Then I toss it. I'm like, are we watching Miss Maisel? What are we doing?
Well, I'm happy for you, buddy. Good luck in the marriage.
Man,
thanks for doing the pod.
This
and
was fun,
and go Browns.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun, man. Thanks for hanging with me, man.
Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you have not done so already, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all the social medias and share with all of your friends. Also, if you want to shoot us a note, you can email us at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and you have not done so already, please go back and listen to all the episodes we've done before. Thanks so much, everybody.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.